And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, still the greatest nation on God's green earth, in my opinion, despite the fact that there is a new world happiness ranking with information based upon the Gallup organization, the World Happiness Report. The United States, since this began, and it began a while ago, the United States has always been among the happiest nations on earth. Not anymore. It's fallen 8 rankings to below the top 20. And that is remarkable. It leads to a front page headline on the Wall Street Journal: Americans are gloomier. Why is that happening? And which nation in particular, other than the normal Scandinavian suspects, ranks way above the United States? And no one might have predicted it. That nation is not China, because we'll be getting that story later. First, we will also be talking about the world on the brink. That's the headline in Drudge. Drudge says, world on the brink as Taiwan admits U.S. troops are now stationed on the Chinese border. Now, there's no Chinese border between the U.S. and Taiwan. Sorry, Drudge. However, there are frontline islands that are stationed, that are located near China, closer to China. And that's where these U.S. troops are. What does this mean toward the World War III watch? We'll be talking about that with Gordon Chang, who joins us later this hour. But first of all, the story about, first of all, there's a story that is basically for tomorrow, because tomorrow is the beginning of spring. And that's the beginning of our Super Spring Sale, SSS, on the Medved Show. 50% off. And this gets you a year's subscription at 50% off for a Medhead Plus membership. You just use the code MEDHEAD to get this particular membership. It was $99.95 for a year. It's now half that, $49.97 for the first year for an annual membership. That's everything Medhead, commercial-free, on-demand Michael Medved radio show podcast, In the Light of History podcast, commentaries, Call of the Week, some interviews, Medved History Store discounts, plus you get to stream every single audio program that is available in the Michael Medved History Store. That is literally several hundred hours of insightful history programs from the Revolutionary War and the Civil War and the First Thanksgiving, the life of JFK, Ronald Reagan's political career, and much, much more. You can also get the basic Medhead membership for 50% off. That's for first year only, but that means that it's down to $29.97 for an annual membership. Again, commercial-free archive of the Medved radio show, podcast. You listen on demand 24/7. In the Light of History podcast, and more. All of this available, part of our special Super Spring Sale. 50% off for first-year subscribers. Check it out at michaelmedved.com or medvedhistorystore.com. Michaelmedved.com is the easiest place to go. Okay, speaking of the easiest place to go and making American history, the headline, Americans are gloomier, a new study shows a drop in Americans' happiness, especially among younger people, as the U.S. falls out of the top 20 for the first time since the global rankings began in 2012. And the U.S. has fallen out of the top 20 happiest countries for the first time. Americans fell to 23rd place in happiness, down from 15th a year ago, according to data collected in the Gallup World Poll for the World Happiness Report 2024. The people of Costa Rica and Lithuania were among those that reported being much happier than Americans. And why? I mean, Lithuania, of course, they're still celebrating their relatively new freedom. It really has only been a couple of decades from Russian domination. It used to be part of Russia. It was a Lithuanian SSR. But no, now they're an independent country, and they're considerably happier than Americans, according to the annual survey, which asks respondents to rate their current lives on a scale of 0 to 10, with 10 being the best possible life for them. Nordic countries dominated the top 10, with Finland in the number one spot. In the U.S., self-reported happiness has fallen in all age groups, but especially among young adults. Americans 30 and younger ranked, are you ready for this, 62nd globally in well-being, trailing their counterparts in the Dominican Republic, Brazil, and Guatemala. Older Americans ranked 10th. A decade ago, young Americans considered themselves happier than those in the midlife groups and about as happy as those 60 and older, but now younger Americans are much less happy. What's amazing here when you look at this and you look at where the United States ranks 62nd among young people, Canada, by the way, does terribly as well. Canada, they're 58th. 30 and under. Who are the winning countries? The countries are top five: Finland, Denmark, Iceland, Sweden, and then a surprise, then followed by Netherlands, Norway, Luxembourg, Switzerland, Australia, New Zealand, and then Costa Rica. Well, what's a surprise at number five in overall happiness? And number two in overall happiness for people 30 and under. The surprise is Israel. And you might think, okay, with the constant terrorist tension, with so many people in different parts of the world motivated by anti-Semitism, with all of the controversies that you hear about with Israel, how does Israel get to be number five? And number two among people 30 and under. Could some of that have to do with the fact that part of being a young person in Israel means you serve in the army? And because basically it is universal service. And yes, you can serve in the military or you can do other kinds of public service. But everybody is obligated to do so. The other aspect about Israel that most people don't know, but we've featured before on the show, so you should know it if you listen regularly, Israel has the highest birth rate in the OECD, the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development. And the birth rate is really obviously a vote for the future. And you're talking about big families and mostly stable families, because Israel also does better than most Western countries in terms of a lower divorce rate, which is generally a good thing when you're trying to calculate human happiness. What's the problem with America? Loneliness plays a big role in how people assess their lives, says John Clifton, who's CEO of Gallup. And that's something that even the Surgeon General has talked about as a problem for this country. But there's also a problem with China and Taiwan confirming U.S. troops on frontline islands. We'll get to that with Gordon Chang coming up on the MedVet Show. The headline declares Taiwan confirms U.S. troops on frontline islands near China. And it appears that the U.S. troops are going to be stationed there on a permanent basis. This is not just a visit. And this, according to some experts, moves us distinctly closer to a confrontation, to perhaps World War III. Gordon Chang knows all about those issues. You can catch up with his X column. It's at Gordon G. Chang. Gordon is the author of The Coming Collapse of China, The Great U.S.-China Tech War, and the just published China is Going to War. So, Gordon, is this a significant development, the stationing of U.S. troops on some frontline islands between China and Taiwan?
It is significant that we have troops there on an indefinite or maybe even a permanent basis, Michael. This has been true for quite some time, though. This is not new. And, you know, one could argue that this moves us closer to World War III, but you can also argue, which I feel, is that it puts us further and further away from World War III, because the presence of U.S. troops there actually deters Xi Jinping from moving on Taiwan. We have about 27,000 troops in South Korea. The North Koreans can overrun them in 2 or 3 days, but the North has not invaded the South since 1950 because they know that the U.S. stands there to protect South Korea. This is sort of the same thing. It's a tripwire force. And so, you know, I think it actually helps preserve the peace.
And do we know how many troops we have there in China? In South Korea, we have what? Is it 20,000 troops? It's some substantial number, isn't it?
The number is used to be 28,500. Now I think it's down a little bit. So I mentioned 27,000, which is a figure that sometimes you hear. But that fluctuates, of course, because we rotate a third of our troops in each year. So there will be, from time to time, differentiations. But it's essentially in the high 20s. In Taiwan, I don't think we know the number of troops, but it's pretty small, because these are people who are training. But the one very hopeful development, Michael, is that we know this, China knows this, and the one thing you don't hear, you don't hear the easily irritated Chinese regime complaining about U.S. troops there. Now, we can speculate about why Beijing is quiet, but it appears to me that actually they don't want to make an issue of this, which means that it's pretty unlikely that they're going to invade those outlying islands.
And what about the Chinese naval craft and aircraft that have been violating both the waters and the skies surrounding Taiwan? Is that going to continue?
I think this will continue. The big event recently was on February 14th when two Chinese fishermen who were actually intruded into waters around Kinmen. Kinmen is a part of Taiwan. It's about 3 or 4 nautical miles from the Chinese coastline. They were chased out of those Taiwan waters by Taiwan's Coast Guard. Their ship was, I think, or their boat was overloaded. They capsized. They drowned. China has then stepped up provocations since the 14th. But China has not done, it hasn't done anything really that serious. And so although they have been intruding on Taiwan's waters, they haven't taken the next step. And that's a hopeful sign, because Xi Jinping, in his own mind, had a justification to go to war. The fact that he didn't go to war is a real sense that he probably believes that now's not the right time to do that, which means, for one reason or another, he is being deterred.
There is a lot of speculation, and this is beyond your normal geographic area of concentration, that if things go well for Vladimir Putin in Ukraine, and if he ends up winning what he wants, which is to take some of Ukrainian territory and reattach it to Russia, if he's successful in that, that it would greatly encourage the Chinese to take action and perhaps even invasion of Taiwan. Do you follow that line of thinking?
Absolutely. This is, Xi Jinping actually green-lighted Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine. We know that because 20 days before the invasion, China and Russia issued that 5,300-word joint statement when Putin went to Beijing for the opening ceremony of the Beijing Winter Olympics, and that's when they declared their no-limits partnership. China has been supporting the Russian war effort. China and Russia have been destabilizing North Africa together, and China has been supporting Iran's attack on Israel. So China is fighting proxy wars. And if it succeeds in one of those proxy wars, then I think that they're going to be emboldened. Remember, all of this cascade of really bad events started after the catastrophic withdrawal from Afghanistan. And that's when I think Putin and Xi Jinping took the measure of Joe Biden and said, we can get away with a lot of stuff. So all of this is connected. And if we were to win in these proxy wars, I think it makes Xi Jinping think twice. I think it makes peace in East Asia much more likely.
And do you think it is appropriate for the United States to actually do the kind of combined effort that had been talked about, which is more money for border security, more money for Taiwan, more money for Israel, and more money above all for the Ukrainians who need it a lot right now?
We need to do this. And I know it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money we don't have. But beating Russia back in Ukraine is a lot cheaper than fighting World War III. So the question is, are we going to do the hard stuff now, or are we going to wait, like democracies often do, and get themselves into really big conflicts, like Britain and France could have prevented World War II in Europe at an early stage, 1936, when the Third Reich remilitarized the Rhineland. Britain and France chose not to do that, so they ended up in World War II. We're basically the Britain and France of our decade. And the question is whether we are willing to take those matters into hand and actually oppose the barbarism, the genocide, and the aggression of Putin. So this is an existential question right now.
People can put that question into context with the work of Gordon G. Chang. You can find him again on what used to be called Twitter, which is now X. It's Gordon G. Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, and also his new book, China Goes to War, with some perspective of what that means for the country that is ranked 64th. And on the Michael Medved Show, a happy, happy, happy birthday to a great American institution. The Republican Party was founded today, March 20th, 1854. That makes today the 170th birthday of the Republican Party. The Republican Party was founded in Ripon, Wisconsin, and it's an amazing story. I've always been on the edge of trying to write something about it, because the people who founded the Republican Party, it was about 12 people who were gathered in a one-room schoolhouse at the edge of the North Woods. And Ripon, Wisconsin at the time was really in the middle of nowhere. I mean, absolutely not where you would expect the most successful political organization in all of American history to have been initiated. And by the way, the Republicans have won more often. From the time of the founding in 1854, they founded the party early enough to participate in the congressional elections in 1854. And they immediately captured not a majority of the House of Representatives, but a big chunk. And then 2 years later, they won the majority and took over the speakership. So this was not a third party. That's before the Republicans nominated for their first candidate for president in 1856. But what was the point is all of these folks, most of whom had been Whigs before, were bent out of shape by the fact that the Pierce administration, and Franklin Pierce was the worst president we ever had, and certainly contributed to the onset of the Civil War. They erased the Missouri Compromise. They erased the previous law that had said that when territories became states, the territories below the 30th parallel, in other words, in southern states like Texas that were new states in the Union, they could have the institution of slavery. But slavery would be banned above the 30th parallel. And when Stephen Douglas, a Democratic operative from Illinois, put through the Kansas-Nebraska Act to say that those new territories that would become states could have their own vote and could vote to authorize slavery, it not only provoked a border war in Kansas, it provoked a lot of former Democrats and a lot of former Whigs and a lot of former know-nothings to say, we've had it, we have to start a new party. And we're going to start a new party that's going to be based on the idea that slavery is wrong and that, okay, slavery exists in the country. They were not an abolitionist party, but they were opposed to the spread of slavery into the territories. And the party was so enormously successful, partially because of the caliber of leadership that it found very, very early on, including Abraham Lincoln, who was a little bit slow in joining the new Republicans because he had these long attachments to the Whigs, but then he moved over. Meanwhile, we have a dramatic Medved music review.
The Michael Medved Music Review. Covering the creative geniuses whose timeless artistry can move us, inspire us, and enrich our lives. And now, it's time for the Michael Medved Music Review.
He trills his R's so beautifully, doesn't he? This is a review of a new technology. It is called Suno, which is like ChatGPT, but for song creation. The way it works is users can write up a description of a song that they want to be created by this machine. And then Suno will create lyrics, it'll create a melody, and even musical instrumentation and accompaniment for that melody. And it also hands you a recording of the song, completely AI-generated in seconds. Here is audio of a YouTuber playing around with this new technology. Now, listen to how eerily realistic the finished song sounds. And it's produced in about 5 seconds after the description is entered into the program. Listen.
Okay, for this prompt, I'm saying, write a song about going from rags to riches and becoming the largest supplier of lemons. You own the lemon market and have a lemon monopoly. You are a rich, evil, lemon fat cat. All right, go for it. We're really going to push this thing to its limits today. Let's see our Lemon Empire song.
Now I'm the owner of the lemon market, so bright.
Okay. This is pretty remarkable, and here is another AI generated by Suno. This tune is, to fulfill the description, that's all they gave him, a pop song about a fan who's obsessed with Willy Wonka memorabilia and also thinks that Willy Wonka character is real. Listen.
Pop song about obsessing over Willy Wonka and being a creepy collector of Wonka memorabilia, and the singer also thinks that Wonka is real. All right, this one.
Okay, this again. it's disturbing because would you immediately say, "Wait a minute, no human being wrote this. This is obviously something that's done mechanically or automatically," or does this not sound like pretty much any other song you'd find on the radio? It is fairly extraordinary. Meanwhile, there is more about the ongoing campaign and also about a big rally outside their city hall. Where protesters voiced concerns they didn't want their city to turn into the next Seattle. What does that mean? An influx of drugs and crime to their town. Now, where is that rally from exactly? We will let you know. Coming up on the Medved Show. And there were residents who gathered here on the Michael Medved Show. They gathered not in Seattle, but in a separate city, which is in what's called the East Side. East Side doesn't mean the east side of the city of Seattle. It means the east side of Lake Washington, which is a big 25-mile-long lake that is directly to the east of the city. In any event, Redmond, Washington is located there. Redmond is the headquarters of a fairly big company you've heard of called Microsoft. And residents gathered, and it was fairly large gathering, protesters, voicing their concerns that they didn't want their city to turn into the next Seattle. What's so terrible about Seattle? An influx of drugs and graffiti and crime and homelessness and dysfunction. What they were speaking out against was the proposal for a low barrier, as it's described, housing unit that was planned for their city. Listen, sounded like this.
We do not want to see it on our streets, something that's happening in Seattle.
The rally is about getting people to have a say. The city council did this without taking any input from the residents, the taxpayers, and they just did it in secret.
So rescind the decision to give the public land to Plymouth Housing.
I know the governor has been very vocal about bringing homeless to all the cities in Eastside because he thinks Eastside should, you know, take the burden of that to help out. However, why should Eastside cities help with the mess that Seattle created for themselves?
That's a reasonable question, it seems to me. By the way, the audio was gathered by Jonathan Cho, our friend from the Discovery Institute. And meanwhile, when it talks about protest and public action, there is this report from the New York Times. A new $120 million pledge to lift President Biden and his allies will push the total expected spending from outside groups working to reelect Mr. Biden to what? They're getting $120 million more. They're going to have over $1 billion this year. The League of Conservation Voters, a leading climate organization that is among the biggest spenders on progressive causes, announced its plans for backing Mr. Biden yesterday at a moment when the Republican challenger, former President Donald J. Trump, is struggling to raise funds. Mr. Biden's campaign, independent of the outside groups, expects to raise and spend $2 billion as part of the reelection bid. In other words, outside groups, $1 billion, and then outside the outside groups, another $2 billion, $3 billion. This is phenomenal. The pro-Biden outside money originates from nearly a dozen organizations that include climate groups, labor unions, and traditional super PACs. There are left-wing groups like Move On, and moderate Republicans, like Republican Voters Against Trump. The largest spenders so far are the Future Forward and Super PAC blessed by the Biden campaign, which has reserved more than $250 million in television and digital advertising already. And it goes on. The amazing thing about this is Mr. Biden's campaign announced on Sunday that it, along with the Democratic National Committee and affiliated fundraising organizations, entered March with $155 million in cash on hand, ready to spend. And the Trump campaign and the Republican National Committee and other affiliated organizations, they had $40 million at the end of January. The groups have not released more recent totals. But $40 million versus $155 million? Okay. You can do the math. It's almost four times as much money for the Democratic side. And meanwhile, there's this. It's fascinating and I think worth talking about, despite the fact that it hasn't gotten much attention. A report from CNN that all but one of the 100 cities with the world's worst air pollution have something in common. What do they have in common? Of the 100 cities with the world's worst air pollution, 99 of them were in Asia. According to a new report, with the climate crisis playing a pivotal role in bad air quality that is risking the health of billions of people worldwide, the vast majority of these cities, 83 of them, 83 of the 100 worst cities are all in one country. Which one? The United States? No, thank God. It's not even in China. 83 of the worst cities in terms of air quality were in India, and they all exceeded the World Health Organization's air quality guidelines by more than 10 times, according to the report by IQ Air, which tracks air quality worldwide. Begusarai, a city of 500,000 people in northern India's Bihar state, was the world's most polluted city last year, with an average PM2.5 concentration of 118.9. That's 23 times of what they say creates danger. It was followed in the IQ rankings by the Indian cities of Guwahati, Assam, and Mulanpur in Punjab. Across India, 1.3 billion people, or 96% of the Indian population, live with air quality that is seven times higher than World Health Organization guidelines, according to the report. Now, this is appalling. And despite the fact that the U.S. is falling in the happiness ratings, they report only 10 countries and territories had healthy air quality. Number one with the best air quality? Finland! Again, we're talking earlier about AI songs. Now, here is a classic movie about AI technology. Very thought-provoking, actually. Listen.
Now, it's time for Medvid on Movies.
Joaquin Phoenix plays a lonely guy frustrated in love who finds a novel solution to his romantic challenges in her.
The woman that I've been seeing, Samantha,
she's an operating system.
You're dating NOS? What is that like?
I feel really close to her. Like, when I talk to her, I feel like she's with me.
That's a de-glamorized Amy Adams, who's wonderful as usual, playing the main character's closest flesh-and-blood friend. But the real star of the film, the operating system known as Samantha, is never seen at all, of course, though given memorable voice by Scarlett Johansson.
I want to learn everything about everything. I want to discover myself.
I want that for you, too.
You always wanted to have a wife without the challenges of actually dealing with anything real. I'm glad that you found someone.
Yes, but once he's found her, can he keep her? That's the fascinating question in the truly brilliant Her, an unforgettable triumph for writer-director Spike Jonze. The most impressive part of the film is the way he makes its bizarre premise so surprisingly believable in an intriguing view of a future just around the bend. That vision doesn't make for a feel-good movie, exactly, but Her is full of painful, hard-earned insight about the nature of life and love. Rated a very serious R for graphic sexual content, including perhaps the first extended sex scene in movie history involving a human being in an operating system. 3.5 stars for the challenging, original, and occasionally very funny Her.
And on the Michael Medved show, that sex scene that I mentioned there is not quite as spectacular as you might think. Speaking of spectacular, next time